A poisoner must be, for a single mistake can be deadly. I'm going to be honest with you, and I hope you will be honest with me in return. Your parents may die. If I can stop that from happening, I will. But the king does not trust them, and he will test their loyalty. But know this, Owen. They did not abandon you. It was a difficult choice for them, but they did their best to protect their whole family, including you. They thought you would be the safest at the palace if I were still here to care for you, and I will do everything within my power to help you. You see, her words halted, her voice becoming thick. She reached out and smoothed his hair, just as his mother used to do. I miss Maman, Owen sighed softly. Her shoulder looked soft. And I am certain she misses you terribly, Owen, she whispered. She reached up her gloved hand and dabbed it against the tip of his nose. You are a darling little boy, Owen, so young. The king is wrong to keep you away from your parents. Owen was getting tired, and he leaned against her arm, resting his head against her shoulder. Can you really help me? He asked hopefully. She put her arm around him. I think so, Owen. I'm working on a plan. Really? Just the beginnings of one. Will you tell me? He begged. Hugging his shoulders, she planted a kiss on the top of his head. Not yet. I have some ideas, but I need to ponder them more. Thoughts have a way of growing. If you put your mind to it, you can accomplish surprising things. Truly, truly, Owen. Most people suffer from a lack of imagination. They don't dare enough. But I do. I helped Erida become king. Both times. She nudged his arm. The reason most people don't arrive at a destination is they never embark. They think of all the reasons why they can't do it, so they don't even try. I thought I could escape, Owen said dejectedly. I went to the sanctuary, but the king, he tricked me into coming out. He heard a silvery laugh at that. Oh, yes, he did indeed. The king is fountain-blessed, Owen. Do you know what that is? He scrunched up his nose in surprise. He is? I've never met one before, but in the stories they are like heroes. The king isn't like that. She hugged him again as if she were very much enjoying sitting next to him. Not exactly, Owen. You know how every baby is taken to a sanctuary so that the Deconius can bathe his head with fountain water? That's called the water rite. It marks a hope that the child will be fountain-blessed, but very few are. Only one child in 1,000 is fountain-blessed. He turned and looked at her, gazing up at her pretty face. I heard Mona talking about it. She said a man who made bread was fountain-blessed. From Paizan, yes, I heard about him. I know you've heard some of this before, but it will be easier to explain if I start at the beginning. Let me tell you about the true nature of the fountain. The fountain is all around us. It's like a rushing of waters that you can feel, but not hear. Have you ever lay down and shut your eyes and felt like you were drifting? Owen nodded energetically. When someone is fountain-blessed, they can gather the energy of the fountain, like filling a cup with water. Then they can use that power to do something, something amazing. King Severin's power is in his voice. When he uses the magic of the fountain, when he speaks to you and touches you, he can make you believe what he is saying is true. But as I said, everyone who is fountain-blessed needs to somehow draw in the magic. The king has an unusual way of filling his cup. Have you noticed it? Owen stared at her in surprise and tilted his head. Is it his dagger? He's always slamming it. Anchoret smiled fondly. No, that's just a nervous habit. He's restless. Think about his words. He has power with his words. Owen frowned, deep in thought. He's always angry, except with the princess. I told you that you were clever. She brought her hands together under her chin. There is power in words, Owen. So much power. When you tell your mother you love her, it makes her feel warm and happy. If you tell her that you hate her... Her voice became darker, crueler, as one of her hands reached away from her mouth and tapped his chest. That carries hurt. Her voice softened again, and she settled her hands in her lap. The king gains his power through insulting others. You cannot be in a room with him without experiencing it. That is how he draws in the fountain's magic. Every insult, every cutting word adds a drop to his cup. When it is full, he can use the magic of the fountain against someone, an individual. And they will believe whatever he says, no matter how outlandish. He did not always realize he was fountain-blessed. I think he discovered it, almost by accident. Once he knew it, he began to use it to make himself king. I warned his brother about it, but he would not listen to me. He thought his brother was loyal. Owen looked at her curiously. He doesn't insult Princess Elise. Anchoret nodded. You are right. And observant. I need some time to work out my plan, but if you would like, I will come visit you tomorrow and we can talk again. She paused before continuing. I've been watching over you since you arrived, Owen. I like playing with your tiles, too. Now, you should be abed by this hour. She mussed up his hair again, then her fingers slowed and gently played with some of the feathery tufts. How do you know so much about it, about what it feels like? Are you fountain-blessed, Anchoret? He asked. She kept her eyes on his hair and then nodded once. That is another reason the king wants to kill me, she said. Why don't you head to bed? You are going back to the tower? He asked. She nodded with a sad smile. I must stay hidden during the day, she said. I do much of my work at night when everyone is asleep. Can I see your tower? He asked, grabbing her hands and squeezing them. Of course, she agreed. If you promise to tell no one how to get up there. I promise. She patted his cheek tenderly. There are secret passages throughout the palace, she confided conspiratorially. I can show you all of them. Would you like that, Owen? He wrapped his arms around her waist and hugged her tightly, enjoying her warmth. It had been so long since he had hugged anyone. Anchoret was startled by his sudden show of affection, but she wrapped her arms around him as well and kissed the top of his tangled hair again. I won't let him hurt you, she promised. Not as he did the others. Who? Owen asked, tilting his face up to her. His brother's sons, she answered gravely, and he could see the sadness in her eyes once more.
There is a precept amongst us in the Espeon. We glory in the tales of our exploits, of our manipulations. We especially love to trick each other. You see, it is double pleasure to deceive the deceiver.
Dominic Mancini, Espion of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 12. Poisoner. Anchoret Trinui lived in the highest tower of the Palace of King Fountain. As Owen climbed the steps with her, hand in hand, she told him how she was able to keep her presence secret. No servants went to her tower. The butler's servants believed the castle almoner maintained it. The almoner was told that the butler's staff serviced it.
The master carpenter thought it was scheduled to be remodeled as soon as the funds became available. It was protected by a web of lies and deceptions so subtle that everyone had a belief about the tower that was just not true. One of the few people who did know the truth, Ankaret explained, was the cook, Leona, who always set aside a tray of food each night. Not even Eridur's queen knew where the poisoner dwelt. The stairs were a difficult climb for Owen, and he was breathing hard as they huffed up the narrow tower well the following night, his guide holding a single candle to light the way. His forehead was plastered with sweat by the time they reached the top.
"It's so small,"
Owen said, panting, after she welcomed him to her private domain. Most of the space was occupied by a small canopied bed, swathed with thick velvet curtains to help her sleep in the daylight. The blankets were furs, and Owen went to them and rubbed his hands against their softness. There was a small table topped with a globe, a set of scales, and several vials and tubes containing various potions and concoctions. His eyes widened when he saw them, but he kept his distance. Throughout the room there were pestles and mortars of various sizes, some on the floor, some on the windowsills. These made him nervous, so he looked away. His gaze fell on a fancy embroidered curtain, and he walked up to it for a better look.
"This is pretty,"
he said as he touched it reverently.
"Thank you.
I made it," Ankaret said. She went to the table with the potions and began mixing up a cup of tea.
"How?"
he asked in amazement, but she did not answer as she worked on the drink. Then his eyes narrowed in on the curtains on the bed, done in darker threads, and shot down to the similarly designed carpet. Everything in the room, from the table to the bookshelves, had little ornamented embroideries.
"You did all of these?"
Owen declared. His mother and sisters did sewing, but nothing this fancy.
"I like embroidery," she said modestly. "That is my gift. I never tire of it."
"You like to stack tiles, true?" He nodded, touching the fringe of a shawl draped over the only chair in the room.
"I normally don't receive visitors," she said. "You are the first to have been in my tower in many years. Here, drink this. It will help with your wheezing. Your lungs are weak and in need of some medicine."
He eyed the cup suspiciously, but it smelled fragrant, and when he tasted it, he could tell she had added honey. It had a strange flavor, but not unpleasant. As he sipped, his eyes went hungrily to the wiser board sitting on a small wooden pedestal. The pieces were carved out of alabaster, purple and white, with matching squares. The set filled the small round table.
"Do you play, Wiser?"
Owen nodded eagerly.
"I always used to watch my brothers play, but I like to play as well."
"Would you like to play it with me?"
"Yes,"
Owen said, slurping down the rest of the tea.
"It's normally black and white. This one is purple. I want to be purple."
"I like to play white," she said. She went over and knelt on the rug by the pedestal and board.
"How do you play it by yourself?"
Owen asked curiously, studying the board. Ankaret moved the first piece. Owen followed, using his normal pattern of moving the middle pieces first. She captured his king in four moves. Owen's eyes stared at the board, then at her.
How did you do that so quickly?"
Ankaret smiled knowingly.
"I will teach you. There are many strategies in Wiser. If you know them, they can help you win quickly. Would you like to learn them?"
Owen nodded with enthusiasm. As they reset the few pieces, she asked him another question.
"Owen, are you afraid of me because I'm a poisoner?"
His head whipped up and he looked at her, his eyes betraying his emotions. He nodded but did not say anything.
"Owen," she said softly, putting the last piece in its place. "Please understand. I only poison dangerous people, and only when it becomes absolutely necessary. I would be a little afraid if I were in your place. But I wanted to show you my tower so you would see that being a poisoner is a very small part of who I am.
It is one way I serve the Queen, yes. But I also serve her by giving her advice and counsel. When I was trained as a poisoner, I was also trained as a midwife. So part of my work involves death, and another part involves life. She gave him a meaningful look he didn't understand. Then she brushed her hands together. I also try to remove threats to the kingdom without resorting to poison. I like to make beautiful things. I do a lot of thinking while I stitch. My mind goes this way and that, studying a situation from many angles. That's why I am very good at Wiser. She put her hands down in her lap. I want to help you, Owen. But if I am to help you, I need to trust you, and you need to trust me. I brought you to my tower. If you told anyone that I lived up here, the king would send soldiers to kill me. Owen gasped, feeling a prickle of unease go down his back. He wouldn't do that. She nodded seriously. So you see, I am trusting you. But that is what friends do, Owen. I want to be your friend. Not just because the Queen told me to help you, but also because I like you. I will do my best to come up with a plan to keep you safe. I will teach you Wiser. I will teach you all about poisons, so you will know by smell if something is harmful. I will give you potions that will help you breathe better and make you stronger. But Owen, I will never ask you to poison the king or anyone else. That would be wrong of me, wouldn't it? Owen nodded vigorously, his eyes wide. The queen has not asked me to harm the king, even though he is a dangerous man. He is the last heir of the Argentine family. If he dies, there will be terrible calamity, and Dunsworth can't inherit because his father was guilty of treason. What did he do? Owen asked with eagerness. She shook her head. There is too much to explain for me to tell you everything in one night. We have time, Owen, you and I. Tomorrow we shall talk again. We will need others to help us if we are to succeed. Leona and Drew will help. I'll speak to them tomorrow, but we will need others to join us as well. You know Dominique Mancini, who stays in the kitchen? He could be a good helper. Owen gave her a little frown. But he works for the king, she smiled. He pretends to. He really works for someone else and is spying for them also. I think I can persuade him to be an ally. I can be very convincing. But your role is the most important, Owen. You will need to learn courage. You will need to do things you think are impossible. I believe you can. She reached out and smoothed his hair, giving him a warm smile. Owen swallowed as he looked into her eyes. Suddenly she winced like the king did when he moved his leg a certain way, but she did not drop the smile. Are you sick? Owen asked. Tired, she said. Go back down to the kitchen. I will meet you there again tomorrow night. Will you do that for me, Owen? I cannot. Make it back down the steps right now. He nodded, staring at the little room in wonder again. He was eager to return. This is our secret place, Anchorette whispered. Owen went to the small doorway. I won't tell anyone. I promise. Can I take the candle? She nodded. Leave it on the table by the tray of food Leona left for me. Blow it out, Owen, when you get downstairs. It was nice seeing you. She halted, her words falling into silence. Owen stared at her a moment longer, waiting for her to say more. He had the distinct impression that she was going to say that they had met before, but he would never have forgotten someone like Anchorette.
It was mid-bite of a bowl of blueberry fool that I learned she's still alive. I almost choked. I was handed a note with instructions to wait in the kitchen until after dark. It bore Ratcliffe's seal, so I obeyed and helped myself to the sweet dessert as I waited. But the note was not from the odious Ratcliffe.
It was from Ankaret Treniwi.
I jest not. By all accounts, this woman died 8 years ago. I remember hearing of it and wondering at the audacity of the king's brother, Earl of Dunsworth, who would judicially murder his brother's poisoner, one of the fountain blessed, no less. You can imagine her demise caused no small shock among the Espion, both foreign and domestic. Some say Eridur had his brother killed because of Ankaret's death. I cannot tell you how delicious this is. The news, not the berry fool. She has promised to tell me her story. She has promised me information that cannot be bought, traded, or stolen. She is the penultimate trickster, the cunning hand, the queen of deception. And she is now my teacher. I think I'll take another helping.
Dominique Mancini, Espion of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 13. Broken Vows. Owen's world changed the night he met Ankaret Treniwi. He was part of a secret now, a secret so vast and interesting that he could hardly sleep. Over the nights that followed, she taught him about the secret tunnels and passageways that lined each of the palace's rooms, how to find the hidden latches that would open a door concealed by a painting, how to slip away a panel of wood so he could see and hear what happened in the adjacent room. She taught him how to walk quietly, how to hold perfectly still. She taught him the secrets of torchlight and shadows, and how the human eye adjusts to both. Owen, being an eager learner, soaked it all up. When Ankaret wanted to visit him during the day, she would slip something into Jules' tea that would send the woman off into a loud snoring fit. They would always return from their outings well before she snorted herself awake, none the wiser. The secret gave Owen a sense of power and purpose. When the king jabbed his dagger in his hilt or mocked Owen during the meal, he would look back and think, "If only you knew what I know. If only you saw what I did in your palace." The palace was an intricate maze of corridors and towers. But beyond the well-kept halls where everyone walked and ate and slept, there was an underworld teeming with dark, hidden places. Places that smelled like musty barrels of wine. Places where the guardsmen diced and drank with the servants and stayed out of Berwick's sight. Owen watched Dick and Ratcliffe's espion as they boasted and bragged about their exploits when they came in from assignments. As they mocked Ratcliffe behind his back and scorned him for always heaping the credit for their work on himself. Ankaret did not say much. She would take Owen to new places and let him wander around and explore while she looked on with a smile of affection and warmth and answered his questions. Sometimes she would ask him a question, something to make him think and think hard. Only after he had exhausted his brain would she provide the clues he needed to teach himself the answer. "Ankaret?" he asked her one day, as they were playing a round of wiser at the table in her tower room. She had already taught him the simple ways to defeat any opponent who was untrained. Their games were lasting longer now, but he had never come close to winning yet.
"What is the most useful thing I need to learn? Is it poisons? When are we starting that?"
She was about to move her next piece, but she lowered her hand into her lap instead.
"What do you think the most useful thing is, Owen?"
He scrunched up his brow.
"I don't want to kill anyone," he said.
She gave him a patient look and said nothing, letting him tease it out in his own mind.
"There is more useful knowledge than poisons," she said encouragingly.
He frowned, screwing up his nose.
"I think it might be knowing when to use poison," he said.
"Tell me what you mean," she asked.
"Well, you said that you only use poison if other things don't work. So isn't it most important for a person to be able to tell whether a situation is hopeless or not? Like what you did with Mancini. You knew you could trust him to help you."
Ankaret laughed softly. "I wouldn't go that far."
"But you trusted him enough to tell him you didn't die. And he's part of the Espion."
"Many of the Espion know about me," Ankaret said. "He didn't.
By giving him that secret, I gave him power. That's what he craves more than anything, so I knew it would make him a valuable tool.
He craves muffins more than power, Owen said disdainfully.
She smiled again and tousled his mousy hair.
He does indeed.
Did I answer your question?
Owen frowned.
Not really.
You're pretty good at not answering questions.
Let me put it another way. Let's talk about it like stacking tiles. You build a tower out of tiles, and then you want to knock it down. If you set the tiles too far from the tower, it won't work.
Owen looked at her curiously.
Well, the tower needs to have a weakness. You have to hit it at the right angle to make the tiles fall. If you hit it the other way, nothing will happen.
Yes, exactly.
You have to hit it where it will fall.
That's what I did with Mancini.
I didn't offer him food. He has plenty of that.
I offered him knowledge. Secrets.
She reached her hand out and moved the next piece, winning the game of Wiser. Owen scowled. He had already planned his next two moves and had not seen it coming. He didn't think he was ever going to win against her.
But how did you know that? He pressed. How did you know that's what he wanted?
Anchorette folded her hands in her lap. She was quiet for a moment. Sometimes he could tell she was in pain, but this was not one of those moments. Her pain usually started with tightness around her eyes, and then her breathing would change, and she would tell him it was time to go.
Owen, she said softly, peering into his eyes. The most important thing you can learn is discernment.
Have you heard that word before?
He shook his head no.
It is the ability to judge well. It means not just seeing an action, but the reasons behind the action. Many people say things they do not believe. They lie and deceive. They may act one way in public and another in private.
Owen stared at her, still confused.
I don't understand.
This is hard enough to explain to adults, Owen. It is especially difficult to explain to children because you are so young and haven't experienced much yet.
I'll try to help you.
You like to talk. You like to ask questions. You like to laugh. But when you are in the presence of King Severn, your voice goes down to a tiny squeak and you cannot speak. It's because he makes you anxious and uncomfortable, right?
He nodded.
If I judged you by how you are in the king's presence, I would not see the whole picture of you. By spending time with you, I've gotten to know you better. I have learned what you are really like. The ability to do this quickly is called discernment. It is priceless, Owen. Let me tell you a story to show you why.
No longer upset about losing the game, he wriggled his finger in his ear to stop an itch, then stared at her eagerly. He loved hearing her stories, for they were rare.
There was a king, almost a century ago. He stole the crown from his cousin.
Why did he do that? Owen asked, curious.
Because the king banished him for having an argument. He was a duke just like your father. And he had an argument with another man, an earl. They would not resolve it, so the king banished them both. One he banished forever, the other he banished for a time. Then the king needed some money, and he stole it from the banished duke's estate, the one who was going to come back in time.
Owen scrunched up his face. That's not fair!
Anchorette smiled. You're right, it wasn't. And the king ended up losing his crown to the duke because of it. One day, years later, some of the new king's men began to rebel against him. They created an army to depose him.
Why? Had the king done something to them?
Yes, but it wasn't over money.
What happened was he did not show them enough gratitude.
People can be strange sometimes, Owen. They will rebel for small reasons. The king was old and sick at the time, so he could not lead his armies anymore. He sent one of his sons to lead it in his place. When his son arrived,
The leaders of the rebels tried to talk to him first in the hopes of avoiding a battle which would have killed many people on both sides. The prince listened to their complaints and made promises in his father's name. He told them that if they disbanded the army, they would be heard and their problems would be solved. The rebels listened, and they believed him because he swore an oath of honor in the king's name. The young prince suggested that both armies disband at the same time. The soldiers would go home, and no one would be injured or killed. Do you know what happened next, Owen?
No,
he said. He had never heard this story before. The prince sent his captain out, but he did not disband his army. They waited until the other army was disbanded and the soldiers were leaving. Then they hunted down what remained of the rebels and started killing them as they escaped. The leaders were all taken to the river and drowned because they were wearing heavy armor. This is a sad story, is it not, Owen? Owen's heart had filled with horror.
But the prince lied!
Anchorette nodded, her expression sad. That is the way of princes and power, Owen. That is the nature of the kingdom of Ceredigion. In truth, it is the nature and disposition of most men. So think on this. If you were one of the rebel leaders and the prince promised you forgiveness and reward, it would matter very much if you had discernment. He needed to make a decision based on what type of man he believed the prince to be. Was he a man of honor? Or was he willing to say anything, do anything to help his father keep his crown? She folded her hands together. That is why discernment is the most important thing you can learn, Owen. It takes time and experience. Sadly, one wrong judgment can lead to... Well, you heard the end of the story. Owen had no doubt that King Severn was like the prince who had so ruthlessly killed his enemies. He had made Owen promises and promptly broken them. He would say or do anything to maintain his power. Maybe that's what Anchorette was trying to teach him. She smoothed her silk skirts. Why don't you go back? Jewel will awaken soon, and then you can have some supper. I hope to see you later tonight. He smiled and rose, feeling little tingles in his feet from the way he had been sitting. He gave her a hug. She liked it when he did. And she patted his back and kissed his cheek. You really are a darling little boy, she whispered, grazing her finger down his cheek. Have you thought of a way yet? He pressed. No, but I have some ideas. I'll keep thinking as I work. She reached for her needles and embroidery. Owen went back down the narrow stairwell and slipped down the secret corridors. He found Jewel in the room, still snoring softly. He waited a moment, listening to her breathing, and then grabbed a book and read it until she awakened with a fitful snort. I'm hungry, Owen said, slamming the book shut and putting it away. I'll meet you at the kitchen. Without waiting for her reply, he dashed out of the room, hearing her scold and chide him as he went.
Wait for my old bones, lad! Wait a moment! Owen, Satchel, you get back here! Owen!
As he rushed around the corner, he collided with Dunsworth, who was coming the other way. The older boy grunted.
Watch where... Oh, it's you! Kiski!
He seized Owen's arm, clearly intent on giving him bruises. Owen, almost without thinking, grabbed Dunsworth's little finger and yanked backward. It was something Anchorette had taught him about the body and its weak points. The little finger wasn't easy to grab, especially if someone was expecting it. But Dunsworth wasn't. He yelped in pain and surprise and released his grip. Free, the wiry little boy started running toward the kitchen.
You little urchin!
Dunsworth bellowed, starting after him at a run. Owen's stomach twisted with fear as he ran down the corridor, cursing himself for not having waited for Jewel. It was a long way to the kitchen, and Dunsworth's legs were much longer. Owen ducked around a side corridor. If he could reach the end without being seen, he could vanish through a secret door. The sound of his pursuer's boots grew louder.
Come back here, little snot!
Owen's feet were going so fast he almost wasn't touching the tiles. He could feel the vibrations of the pounding behind him. He wondered if he had enough time to trip the latch, but what if Dunsworth saw him? How would he explain his secret knowledge? Worry and fear mixed in his bowels. Panicked with indecision, he veered around the corner and nearly slammed into someone. He caught himself just in time, but a firm and sturdy hand grabbed his shoulder. He twisted around in fear just as Dunsworth came barreling around the corner, his face twisted with rage.
"Hold there,"
Duke Horwath scolded.
"Look at you two, racing about."
Dunsworth's face was red and he was panting.
"Lord Horwath,"
he stammered as he stumbled to a stop.
"I was just trying to catch him. He stole something from me."
Horwath's eyes narrowed suspiciously. It was obvious he didn't believe it for a moment.
"Get you gone,"
he snarled at Dunsworth. The lad's ruddy cheeks paled, and he turned on his heel and fled. Owen had not seen the Duke for weeks, and had not expected him to return to King Fountain so soon. He tried to stammer out his thanks, but his tongue swelled in his mouth, and he could say nothing. Frustrated with himself, he wiped sweat from his forehead.
"I just came from the kitchen,"
the Duke said gravely.
"I was surprised you weren't there. Everyone says that's your favorite haunt."
Owen bobbed his head, but he still couldn't speak. His jaw was locked, and he had no key to open it.
"I brought someone to be a playmate for you. I brought my granddaughter from the north with me."
Horwath's mouth bent into an affectionate smile. "Oh, no," Owen thought darkly.
"I have learned a great deal from Anchorette so far. In return, she asks me for information that is circulating among the Espeon. Trivial things, really. She does not want any information that would jeopardize my position. It seems she has been away from court events for several years. I'm curious as to why she's making an appearance now. Perhaps she intends to poison the king. That would not be a loss, and the people would thank her for it. He may be beloved in the north, but the people of King Fountain believe he's a monster. Anchorette wants gossip about the noble families, like the Duke of Kiskadden, for example. I told her the king is using the Espeon to trick Kiskadden into betraying himself by revealing his involvement with the enemy at Ambion Hill. Little things like that. Oh, and we have a newcomer to the kitchen now. Horwath's granddaughter. She's a water sprite, if ever there was one. Very obnoxious, never stops talking. It's going to be a pleasure tormenting her."
Dominique Mancini, Espeon of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 14. Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer. Owen knew he was in trouble when the Duke's granddaughter squealed upon seeing him for the first time. Loud noises always rattled the young boy, and she was a force of nature in her own right. The delighted squeal was followed by a hurricane of words, touches, and hugs that nearly made Owen flee the kitchen for his life.
"Oh, it's you! It's Owen! I've heard so much about you that I already feel I know you. Aren't you just the most adorable thing ever? I love your hair. Grandpapa, you didn't tell me about how cute he is. He's absolutely adorable. Owen, we are going to be the best of friends. Look, we are even the same height. I had imagined you would be shorter than me for some reason, but look, our noses almost touch."
Owen stood straight as an arrow, feeling overwhelmed by the intensity of the girl. She was holding his hand one second, then mussing his hair the next, then tugging him to stand in front of her, comparing heights. How to describe the whirlwind? It was true. The Duke's granddaughter was his own height. Her hair, gathered behind a jeweled headband that glinted, was a darker brown than Owen's and went just past her shoulders. She wore a velvet dress the color of red wine that had sable fur at the wrists and the neck. She could hardly hold still, and he noticed that she wore a sturdy pair of leather boots beneath her hem that swished and swayed as she moved. She noticed him looking at her feet and grinned, hiking up her skirts.
Do you like my boots? I love these boots. Look at all the buckles and straps. You could try and pull these off, but it wouldn't work. These are my exploring boots. Do you like to climb trees and rocks? I love to climb. There isn't any snow down here at King Fountain, but up in the north there is so much snow. These boots keep me warm, but they are also good for tromping in the snow. You don't talk very much, Owen, do you? Grandpapa said you were shy, didn't you, Grandpapa? That's okay, but I've just been so anxious to meet you.
She wrung his hand and nearly yanked it loose with her shakes.
Give the poor dear a chance to breathe, child, Leona said with a soft chuckle. Master Owen, this is Lady Mortimer.
The young girl looked affronted.
No one calls me that, she chided sweetly. My name is Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer, thank you.
Owen was still reeling from the introduction. He could not decide what color the girl's eyes were. First of all, she did not hold still long enough for him to tell, but they were either blue or gray, or maybe green. But she had an expressive smile that crinkled around her eyes.
We'll have so much fun together, Owen, she said, twisting her hands together in delight. I'm going to live here too for a while. That's what my grandpapa says. You and I will play together and wander the castle together.
She gazed up at the rafters, looking all around.
There are so many places to hide.
I'll leave you two alone to get acquainted,
the Duke said before vanishing from the kitchen.
My dear young lady,
interrupted a sour voice from nearby. It was Mancini, looking more peevish than usual.
You are taking all the air out of the room. Kindly save some for the rest of us.
Her eyes narrowed when she looked at the huge man on the chair. She did not wilt at all in the face of his rebuke. In fact, it made her a little stern.
You are a fat man, she said decidedly.
Mancini chortled with surprise.
You noticed that all on your own, did you?
I spoke the truth, the girl said. You are the biggest man I have ever seen. In the north there are animals that are so fat they can only move underwater. They have huge tusks. I've seen the pelts, but I've never seen a real one.
Mancini stared at her in amazement.
What does that have to do with anything?
Nothing. You just reminded me, is all.
You're as chatty as a little magpie,
Mancini growled.
Do you do this all day or just in the mornings and evenings when people are trying to sleep?
I like to talk, she replied eagerly. I talk in my sleep, too. That's what my governess tells me. I can't stop.
Then she turned away from Mancini, not giving him another look, and returned her focus to Owen, who was trying to sneak into the corner to find his box of tiles. He was amazed by her fearlessness, but he found himself wondering how she would fare at breakfast with the king. Owen imagined her prattling would quickly earn the king's scorn. His satchel was waiting on the bench, so he set it in the corner and sat down to open the box of tiles. She followed him and knelt on the floor beside him.
What are you doing? She asked him quizzically.
Owen likes to put them in rows and then knock them down, Leona explained. He's pretty quiet, Lady Mortimer.
The girl looked at Leona.
Call me Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer, please.
Bless me, child, but that's a mouthful.
But it's my name, the girl repeated in a kind way. I love my name. I love Owen's name, too. Owen Kiskadden. Owen Kiskadden, she sighed. It's like kiss. I love saying it.
Owen shuddered, believing Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer was perhaps the strangest and most annoying individual he had ever met. She tried to peer at the box of tiles over his shoulder, so he turned to block her view. He needed to think. If she had come to the palace to be his companion, when would he be able to see Anchoret Trinirwi and learn his lessons? He loved having a secret, and he was absolutely determined to keep it from this girl. He began to lay the tiles, feeling his ears burn hot from the power of the girl's gaze. She craned her neck to look around him, and he kept turning more to block her view, feeling possessive of the tiles and a bit annoyed at her. After he set up his first row, which looked a bit haphazard because of his discomfort and anxiety, she changed her position and came around in front of him to get an unobstructed view. He ground his teeth and glared at her.
This is interesting, she whispered,
putting her chin on her hands, her elbows on her knees. She grew quiet as she watched him place another row.
Let me help you. It'll go faster, she said, reaching toward the box. Their hands collided over a tile. Instead of grabbing it, she seized his hand and gave him a sly smile. We're going to be such friends, she gushed in a half-whisper. I don't need help, Owen said thickly, not daring to look her full in the face. Her eyes widened with surprise, then her startled expression changed into a smile.
All right, I'll just watch then.
She planted her chin again and watched, mesmerized, as he continued stacking the tiles. She was quiet now. That was good. At first he had worried she would chatter so much he wouldn't be able to concentrate. He glanced up once or twice and noticed a light dusting of freckles across the bridge of her nose. The bustle of the kitchen continued around them, and soon Owen could not hear anything. All the background sounds combined into a gentle lull as he lost himself in the tiles once again. Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer was silent and watchful, staring at the intricate arrangements with utter fascination. He completed the design and sat back on his heels, gazing at it.
It's amazing, Owen, the girl said with wide eyes. What happens next? What happens when you're through?
He had not solved his problem yet. He wanted to talk to Anchorette and get her advice. She was quiet and subdued, more of a listener than a talker, the total opposite of this wild young thing kneeling in front of him. He wondered what the Queen's Poisoner would say about Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer, and what the girl would say if she knew who lived in the knife-like tower.
Push that one, Owen said,
pointing to the tile that would start toppling the others. Her eyes gleamed with eagerness.
Me? That's so sweet of you. You push it over just like this?
She gave the tile a light little tap, and it fell over and made a clickety-clack that continued as all the pieces spilled down. The girl gave a tinkling, silvery laugh of pure delight that was almost pleasant to Owen's ears. Crushing her hands together against her chest, she stared at the collapsed tiles and then shifted her gaze to him.
I love it! That was so beautiful! How did you... I love it, Owen, I love it! You are so interesting! I knew you would be! I want to see it again! You must build it again! Let me help clear the space!
Putting away the tiles was Owen's least favorite part, and Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer was only too eager to assist. In moments, the tiles were back in the box, and he had started on another design.
Part of your hair is white,
she said suddenly, her fingers tickling his mussy hair.
Why is that? Is it paint?
He looked at her in annoyance and shook his head.
You came that way,
she pressed, staring at the little tufts of hair.
That's wonderful. It's like that part of your head is an old man already. You must be really smart, then. I love the kitchen. It smells so good in here. Fresh bread out of the oven is divine.
She leaned back a bit, sighing contentedly.
My papa is dead,
she said after a while. She reached out and took a tile and examined it with her fingers.
I'm not really sure what it means, but he's not coming back. Mama can't stop crying. I loved Papa. He was so kind to me. He gave me ponies and dresses and these boots. It's not your fault he died, Owen. I'm not angry at your Papa.
Owen looked at her, feeling nervous.
My brother died,
he said softly. She nodded matter-of-factly.
He was killed for treason, but that's not your fault either. My grandpapa felt sorry for you. He said you were taken from your family. You were all alone and too shy to talk.
She reached out and touched his knee.
We're going to be friends. I like you very much. You are adorable.
Owen wasn't sure how he felt yet, but his ears were burning again. Chapter 15 Anchorette's Stratagem. Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer's first breakfast with the king went surprisingly well, much to Owen's chagrin. He had wondered how she would take his taunts and temper. She was absolutely fearless. That was the only word to properly describe her. She loved the idea of picking from all the dishes and gobbled up a hearty breakfast while still managing to talk between mouthfuls. She was eager to meet the king and suggested, rather boldly,
that he needed to put a large fountain in the Great Hall, one with glass walls, and fill it with giant fish so that they could watch them swim while they ate. Owen was not certain how the king would react to her demands. King Severn looked at her with half annoyance, half amusement, and offered her a view of the royal fish pond to placate her. She agreed enthusiastically and rushed over to Owen to share the good news. In truth, Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer seemed as comfortable in the Great Hall as if she had lived there her entire life. She wore a new dress. Each day she had a new one. This one was black and silver. Owen stared at her with budding respect, but it frustrated him that he did not share her courage. Why must strangers always leave him so tongue-tied and ashamed? He had always been that way and did not know why.
"And what do you think, Master Owen?"
the king suddenly said at his ear.
"Do you want the hall full of fish?"
Owen's muscles locked up, and he felt a coldness shoot through him at being caught off guard. A pit of fear opened up inside of him, swallowing everything before it. He could not even stammer a reply. He was powerless to say anything. The king snorted and then walked away, unsheathing and jamming his dagger as he went. Owen felt his knees start to buckle, and the urge to cry was almost overpowering. Feeling humiliated, he cast his eyes down. Someone approached, and he felt a hand on his shoulder. He looked up and saw Duke Horwath looking at him sympathetically. He did not say anything, but his touch was comforting. Then he walked after the king and began speaking to him in a low voice. Owen could not hear their discussion, but he could have sworn he heard the duke say Tatton Hall before they were both out of earshot. Later in the afternoon, Owen was building with his tiles, constructing a tower that was taller than those he usually made. It had tumbled a few times, annoying him, but he continued to work on it. Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer lay on her stomach, playing with several pieces of tile and talking about something to which Owen did not pay much mind as he concentrated on the tower. The kitchen bustled pleasantly, and he could smell the delightful fragrance of a pie cooking in the ovens, making his mouth water. Leona made the best crusts he had ever tasted, and he had been tempted more than once to eat the ring of crispy dough without touching the middle part.
"Well?"
the Mortimer girl asked again, and Owen glanced over at where she lay looking up at him. He had started calling her the Mortimer girl in his mind because her name was so long. He was a little annoyed that she now expected a partner in the conversation. She had been doing so well at it by herself.
"What?"
he asked.
"When we get married, do you want to live in the north or in the west?"
He stared at her in shock.
"We're getting married?" "Of course we are. I think we should live in the north. I love the snow. There are mountains, Owen. Mountains so huge they block out the sun until midday. There is always snow up there. There are canyons and rivers and waterfalls."
She sighed dreamily.
"The north is the best place in the world. I would live in the west if you insisted, but I would be sad."
"Why are we getting married?" She set down the tiles.
"You have to get married someday, Owen. Don't be ridiculous."
"I know that, but..."
"Everyone has to get married. Even the king got married, all bent as he is. His wife was from the north, you know, and she was lovely. I'm so sad she died. She used to braid my hair. The prince was 10 when he died of a fever. That's only 2 years older than us. I thought I might marry him someday." She shook her head. "I like you better."
"But..."
"Really, Owen Kiskaden, it's not difficult to answer, the north or the west. You must learn to make decisions. I think we'll live in the north first, and then the west. That way you can choose which you like better. I think I'll always like the north better, but I haven't lived in the west before."
There was a dreamy look in her strange colored eyes as she gazed at the tiles spread out on the floor in front of her. In the light, they were looking greener. It's like they had started off deciding to be blue, then changed their mind and turned gray, and then switched to green just at the very end, around the fringe of her inky black pupils. That was so like her.
"I'm not getting married," Owen said forcefully.
She set down the tiles and looked at him.
"Everyone gets married."
"The prince didn't. He died.
You're not going to die, Owen. The prince was always coughing. I've never heard you cough. You're not sickly at all.
Anchorette's potions had been helping him breathe better. But he knew something the Mortimer girl didn't. Owen looked down at his lap.
The king wants to kill me.
She sat up quickly, her face growing pale with concern.
No, he doesn't. That's the silliest thought I ever heard.
Owen was feeling hot again, his ears burning. She was looking at him with concern and sympathy. She edged closer.
Why would you think something like that?
She whispered. I'm his hostage, Owen replied darkly. That's why I'm here. If my parents do anything to spite him, he's going to kill me. He killed my brother already, it's true.
All the happiness drained from her face. In its place came an implacable anger.
Well, I won't let him do it. I think that's silly. No one kills a little child.
Owen was feeling a little annoyed.
He already has, he mumbled.
What did you say?
She demanded.
He has. Everyone knows about it. His brother had two sons. They were hostages, too. He killed them.
It's not true, she said angrily. Not everything that's whispered is true, Owen.
She reached out and seized his hand, her fingers digging into his flesh.
Don't believe the lies.
Owen gave her a challenging look.
Your grandpapa knows.
He glanced around the kitchen, a dark, brooding feeling enveloping him.
None of us are safe here.
Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer stood and marched out of the kitchen, tossing her dark hair back over her shoulder. Owen was glad she was gone. Mostly. In the middle of the night, Owen was playing wiser with Anchorette in the Poisoner's Tower and telling her everything he could about the castle's newest guest, the Duke's outspoken granddaughter. Anchorette liked to talk as they played the game, which forced him to speak and think at the same time.
I don't want to marry the Mortimer girl, Owen said, blocking one of Anchorette's attacks.
She has decided opinions about many things, Anchorette said, with a hint of amusement in her voice. It's a trait of those from the North. They tend to be outspoken.
Her grandfather isn't, Owen said glumly. He never talks at all.
He grimaced when he realized her next move threatened him in two places at once. Since he would lose a piece regardless, he decided to sacrifice the lesser one. But he stopped himself before he made the move. Instead of responding to the threat, he positioned one of his pieces to threaten another one of hers.
Well done, Owen, she praised. Counter a threat with a threat. An excellent strategy.
Horwath is loyal. He's not as outspoken here at court because this isn't his power base. If you were with him up in the north, there's a chance he would come across differently.
That's where she says we're going to live when we get married, Owen said bleakly.
He looked up at her face.
Can she force me to marry her?
Anchorette pursed her lips.
No, Owen. It's normal for girls to think about marriage. She really won't have much choice in the matter at all. Girls seldom do.
That gave him some relief. It's not that he didn't like the Mortimer girl, but he thought it strange that she was so convinced it was going to happen when they had only just met.
She is brave, Owen said, responding to her move to block him. Her next move won her the game.
He loved Wiser and all the possibilities each game possessed. Even though he'd lost, Anchorette's praise had put him in a good mood, making him feel more generous toward the newcomer.
She sounds like it.
A fish pond in the Great Hall, what an amusing idea. Owen helped to stack the pieces again in order. He liked doing that part almost as much as playing the game. There was something about the beginning of a Wiser game, when all the pieces were lined up properly. The world felt better. When he was done, he looked at Anchorette, watching the soft light of the candle play against her pretty face.
Do you think I should trust her?
He asked. Anchoret considered it thoughtfully.
It's too soon to tell, she answered after a lengthy pause.
Owen thought so too. He had not known her long enough yet. Besides, sharing a secret with someone who loved